This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bohong. Penduduk tak setuju.
Tanggungjawab untuk menentukan tapak adalah bagi pihak PKNS.
Set kursi sampai 20 tahun tak juga berganjak. Dulu-dulu bila tempat kosong ada banyak di Section 19, tapi always di reject.
Itulah kita bagi perancangan ni telah melakukan kesilapan.
Di mana kecilan kau? Wahai wajib-wajib yang bertopeng menjadi syaitan.
Kalau dikira sekarang minyak dah tumpah dan tunggu percikan api untuk terbakar.
Saya malu lah. Kenapa kita buat satu benda yang sensitif lah.
Pada kami keterlaluan.
Walau darah mengalir, kami tetap pertahankan Seksyen 23.
Mengapa harus ada kuil di lokasi yang orang penduduknya tak ramai, orang Gua Hindu?
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Kisah Tauke Manches dan Minyak Tumpah is a story of two communities and the relocation of a temple. So this 2010 film takes a look behind the sensational headlines to understand how the dispute came to be and also to remind us how extremism can easily be fueled when we fail to understand the context of the dispute and manage such situations beyond the emotion. So the film is set to be re-released this weekend on the Freedom Film Network's YouTube channel as part of their Weekend Watch with Freedom Film Fest. So each thematic playlist has allowed us to revisit these past issues and sort of weigh their relevance in today's climate and context. So I want to find out more about this particular film from the directors, Sheridan Mahavira Shakir and Siti Nurbaya Nazmi. Welcome both of you. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. Thank you, Juliet. Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me. So I want to start off to find out how the two of you actually know each other. So I must admit, I found this old interview from 2010 and it said that you guys, you know, just have conflicting views on almost everything from where you have lunch to how best save the environment. I love it. How did you guys actually come together to make a documentary?
So we've been colleagues in the New Straits Times starting in 2006. Okay. So we've both been reporters in the New Straits Times. We started off at the Johor Bahru Bureau.
Okay,
to make the long story short, basically we got transferred back to KL and we still work together on a lot of pieces. So I came across this story. Well, actually this story happened while I was working in KL and I decided to cover it and I wrote about, you know, wrote an article about it in 2009. Yeah.
Yes, basically what happened was that when it was, Sheridan decided to leave New Straits Times, so I was still working, and he came up with this idea of how about writing, doing a documentary together, and I was like, how are we going to do this? Because because really we can't really see eye to eye on a lot of things, and apparently that was the strength of this film. Let me explain why. Because Sheridan has always been a political writer. He writes. He's a specialist in politics. While I'm not, I don't come from that background. I'm more of a human interest writer. I write about people in the streets. I write about personalities and largely hard news. So when he came up with this documentary, fixed with the idea that this is about politics. And I don't agree with that. Mm-hmm. I didn't agree with that. So this is where this disagreement, we decided to find out, to explore what is it really behind the story. Mm-hmm. And yes, we argue on a lot of things, on everything actually. And that's when we decided to see, we began to see how the story developed from the political angle, from the human interest angle. And we got the, how do I put this, yeah? The macro lens of it and the micro lens of it. So we came across from two different perspectives and put together what we think, how we explore first the story. And we came up with a really good story. And it was mind-blowing because it really took both of us by surprise of what we actually discovered. So it was completely different from what we expected, rather than we wanted to build on a hypothesis, but it went beyond that. And okay. The truth really was really interesting, because it was not about extremism. It was about a misplaced promise by the developer of what was supposed to be delivered to the customer, actually, the house buyers in this case.
Yeah. I guess people might not understand what we're talking about. So for those unfamiliar, mm-hmm. can you just remind them about this incident, right, which unfortunately has been referred to as the 2009 Cowhead protest? I mean, if you look anywhere, that's how it's referred to, unfortunately. Maybe you can just help provide some historical context to that particular event.
Yeah, so it's known as a cow's head protest, but then although people remember it for that cow's head protest, you know, where a group of men brought the head of a severed cow and they marched to the gates of the Selangor State Government building, bringing this severed head to protest the relocation of a Hindu temple from Section 19 to Section 26. And the people who were carrying that cow's head, or allegedly carrying that cow's head, were supposedly residents from the Section 26 who did not want the Hindu temple to be moved to their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And the genesis of this dispute is the fact that this Hindu temple was built. I mean, this Hindu temple was built supposedly, you know, more than 100 years ago, and it was built by the workers of a rubber plantation during colonial times. And then, you know, they just, it would start off as a shrine, but then they added it on, and so it became really big. And sometime in the 60s, the land, the estate land, the rubber plantation land, was sold off to the state government, and the state government sold it off to a developer. Mm-hmm. And this developer, PKMS, had decided to build a housing estate around this temple. And I think Siti can continue that story there.
Yeah, from there on, what happened was that the house buyer in the original plan, we found out that, you know, the original plan has on the site of the temple, there was supposed to be two rows of double-story houses. Mm-hmm. There were no temple there. So if you're a house buyer, what happened is that you will see no temple on the site. Yeah. When you're choosing, yeah, which unit that you want to buy, you don't see a temple there. So in reality, when the house was built, and then they realized that when they got the keys, and there's a temple there. And they were promised that this temple will be relocated. But that was not the case for more than 20 years odd. When we filmed it, or when the cow's head protest happened, the temple was still there. And this became something of a huge issue when people are asking for the relocation of the temple and so on. But it was not moved. So it was not relocated. So this has become a sort of what you can call the manches, yeah, and the minyak tumpah of the society there. The house buyers were promised something else,
yeah,
but it was not carried out by the developer. And then, of course, it was taken to another level when you added a racial issue or religious issue there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think even one of the people that you interviewed in the film said that, you know, when he got his house keys and he saw that the temple was there, he went straight back to PKNS and tried to return his keys, right? And tried to get another unit and was told, oh, don't worry. Yeah, that temple is going to be gone soon, right? And of mm-hmm. course, that was just, you know, somebody just talking mm-hmm. without any sort of basis to that decision at all, right?
Exactly. So what happened was that even after 20 years when they got their keys and the temple was not relocated as promised, it was supposed to be a residential area. Can you imagine the worshippers, if they visited the temple for religious events and they cannot be They were restricted. There's no proper parking and so on. They have to double park in front of other people's, the neighborhood houses and all this. And this is really improper for the worshippers or the neighborhood residents. So the developers should take full responsibility of this and fulfill their promise. But then again, when it is taken to up to another level, when sentiments is thrown into it and it became something else, and maybe Sheridan would like to explain on that because he covered the incident.
Siti mentioned something very important, the fact that, you know, it started off as a dispute between house buyers and house owners, right? But because the problem was allowed to fester, it was never really solved, you know? And they had to push it to the state government eventually. You know, they had to get the state government involved. So the thing is, coincidentally, at that point, you had a change in state government.
That's right.
You know, from a state government that used to be from one party that ruled Selangor for, you know, 50 years to a new state government. And this state government was new and it was also trying to prove itself. It had tried to come in and tried to find a fair solution to the issue. But because you also had another party that wanted to make it hard for the state government to govern, and this is where we call it, you know, Tauke Manches and Niat Tumpah, is the fact that you had a festering issue and you get somebody come in who could just basically light up the issue and turn it in, you know, and blow it up, right? And that's the extremist. That's how the film ends, with this guy saying that, you know, extremists are going to take advantage of this issue if you're not careful.
The irony, right?
The irony of it, yeah.
So the
thing is, the film basically tries to explore on both that levels, like where, you know, if you don't solve these type of disputes properly at the ground level, you don't look at... what could not fit into the film because of the time limit was because, like, you know, there was also a misunderstanding in terms of how different religions operated houses of worship.
Okay.
You know, for certain religions, you know, the place where the house of worship or shrine is first built is very important. And it's not a simple thing to just move it.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, other religions have houses of worship that is easily moved because it's not really tied to that place. You know, and so even that kind of upper number difference was not really appreciated by both the developer and also probably the state government and the residents. Yeah. But it spoke to a failure, I think, as us as a society. And also, I think as a state, not really a failure of that state government, because I believe that they tried as much as possible to find a fair solution. But I think, you know, us as a society in managing these differences among different faiths.
Okay, we'll go for a quick break, but when we come back, I'm going to ask you more about the struggles to actually get this film made. I'm speaking today to Siti Nurbaya Nazmi and Sheridan Mahavira Shakir. They are both the film directors of the film Kisah Tauke Manches dan Miniat Tumpah, which will be re-released this weekend on the Freedom Film Network's YouTube channel. We're going to find out more about the making of that film after this quick break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Isu kuil ini merupakan satu hak yang perlu ditangani oleh pentadbiran, mana-mana pentadbiran. Ianya merupakan persoalan hak kaum dan agama yang pentadbiran yang adil akan membela dan menentukan ianya dipenuhi. Pada masa yang sama, kita tidak boleh elak daripada kumpulan yang memperalatkan suasana ini ataupun mempolitikkan suasana ini. Itu tak boleh dielak. Kita kena tangani dan kita harap bahawa masyarakat cukup matang untuk memahami mana yang benar dan mana yang palsu dan mereka tidak mudah diapi-apikan semangat mereka.
Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today are Sheridan Mahavira Shakir and Siti Nurbaya Nazmi. They are both the film directors of the short film Kisah Tauke Manches dan Miniat Tumpah, which is a 2010 film that looked at, quote-unquote, the cow's head incident. And this, of course, involves the relocation of a temple in a predominantly Malay Muslim neighbourhood and basically the fallout from that, right? But, of course, as the film shows, you know, there was so much more to this than just sort of like racial tensions. It was all things that were being lit up, isn't it? And that was fascinating to me because, you know, I remember the incident, but I never actually did much reading up on it until I watched your film. And it was eye-opening to me to realize that the crux of the matter was a planning issue, isn't it? And it's quite shocking how, like you said, how it was just allowed to escalate and to fester and until boom, you know, there was that fire was lit, isn't it? Let's talk about the process of making this documentary. I mean, you speak to a wide array of people, you know, both sides of the story. You've got government officials there. I mean, there's a lot of people that you spoke to. Tell me about that. You know, how did you go about approaching all of them and getting them to speak, actually?
I think in the beginning, basically, because we were both journalists, how we approach the story is basically we have a hypothesis. And then from there on, as journalists, we will approach on who do we need to speak to? Because these are the people that will give us the first hand of their point of views of what the incident was all about, what was the background story. And I think because our approach is as how we write a story, so we are trying to get basically the two sides of the coin. We approach this story by trying to get as many point of views as possible of the people who are involved, who directly involved with the story, from the developer, the state government, the car protesters themselves, and the house buyers, and the worshippers. So interestingly, one of the most, I think probably memorable, was the meeting with the house head protesters. So we met about 8 people, remember, Sheridan?
Yeah, we did. It was a strange but also very tense meeting. because, you know, we didn't realize who they were at first. And they were actually people from, you know, the Section 26 neighborhood. And they said, okay, well, let's go and meet at this restaurant. So we go to this restaurant and suddenly like 8 people show up, right? Mm. And there were all these, you know, very loud, very burly Malay Muslim men. And some of them were shouting at us, you know, asking us, where are you from? Are you from, like, Seini? SBPKR, I remember that one thing some guy, that this guy kept telling me, this guy, you know, PKR special branch, you know, PKR spy, because at that time PKR was in charge of the state government. Yeah. So I didn't know why he kept telling him, no, we're journalists, we're trying to do this documentary.
But what is interesting in that conversation, they were like, even among themselves, there were conflicting views of why they were doing it and so on. But largely what I can understand from all the conversations that we had was from the house buyers right to the worshippers, everybody was frustrated because of a promise that's not fulfilled. Okay. What was promised and what's not delivered. Yeah, this, like what Sheridan said, it festers. Yeah. And this feeling is was taken advantage to a certain extent by certain interested parties. So that's what happened with the cow's head protest and the issue of relocation of the temple.
Yeah, and if I can just add, it's you know, the people who were really affected were like 2 different neighborhoods, you know, Section 19 and Section 26. And what we found out was that, you know, it just really frayed the relations for people in Section 26, because Section 26 also was multicultural, you know, multi-ethnic. Yeah. They had, you know, Indians, Chinese and Malays living together. And then when they found out that certain people from their neighborhood went out and did this cow's head protest, it just frayed it, you know, neighborly relations between them.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if it's irreparable, but at that point in time where you made the film, it seemed quite like that was it, right? There was these deep divides and people weren't really talking to each other anymore in what was once, I suppose.
After 1 year. Even after 1 year, yes.
Yeah, and that was quite a harmonious neighborhood, right? I mean, they always, I think from some of the people that you interviewed, they said, like, you know, we go to see each other's families, we help them look after their cats when they go for Raya, they come for, you know, it was a normal neighborhood, right? And this sort of really changed the situation. You mentioned, Nurbaya, you know, that you were really surprised by everything that you found. I mean, what were some of the other interesting sort of findings that really shocked you, I suppose? Like, you went with your hypothesis, you realized that the hypothesis was not correct or was not quite what you thought it would be. What other things surprised you?
This is when we started filming, yeah. That was back in 2010, yeah. And this was the beginning of, I wouldn't say the beginning, but it is becoming more prominent, the presence of social media. And during a town hall with the residents of that area, 19 and 20, both sections, yeah, this residential house areas, mm-hmm. you could see how people were behaving like really angry, the language and balinkusi and all this. They become very rowdy in the hall.
Yeah,
this was never seen in such a public place like the YouTube. And it became viral. So that was in 2010. It was not like now. People are more aware of these things happening. So they are not like, they do not behave. Or they behave, but they are aware that there is such thing as social media and how it is going to be portrayed or perceived. But at that time, this was rare. So sure. when it was featured as such, the Khaosek protest, how the children were involved in that protest as well, and you could see it in the video, and the rowdy behavior as well, and your neighbors knew who these people are.
Yeah.
So that was shocking, but when we met them personally, they were not like that. They just so this is where the irony is. In person, they are okay. They are just like you and me, but when they go out on a protest or something, and then they wanted to champion a certain cause and they wanted to vent or be angry about something, and they turn into somebody that you don't know. So this is some kind of an awakening itself by the neighbors. So they do not know that this is another side of the other, your neighbor, your own neighbor can behave something like this.
Yeah.
And it's filmed on YouTube, and you can't accept that. Yeah, when every Hari Raya or every Deepavali, Chinese New Year, they were all just neighbors exchanging food or visiting for open houses, and then you saw these people on video on YouTube behaving so unruly. How can you accept that? So this is also one of the more interesting aspect of the human interest, yeah, of the relationship between the neighbors, the residents. And it is kind of awakening to all of them, actually. They feel very raw about the whole thing.
Of course.
So even after a year, they are still very scarred about what they saw on the viral videos. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Sheridan, how about you? You know, what I suppose shocked you the most or surprised you the most, you know, after you sort of gathered all your information?
I don't know if I was really shocked, but I didn't expect them. I think there's a scene in the movie, right, Siti, where we talked about how we wanted to go and film and talk to some of the women in Section 26, right?
Yeah.
Right. And we had already gone and seen them the day before, and they said, like, yeah, you can come and talk to us, you know, tomorrow, because we wanted to get a different point of view from the women of Section 26. We had already gotten a point of view from the men, and none of them wanted to be interviewed. So let's go and speak to the women. And they were very welcoming, very interested in doing the interview. And then, you know, the next day when we're about to actually go and do the interview, we get this call, and then they say that, you know, you just cannot come anymore because, you know, it's dangerous. You know, we don't want anything to happen. And we've been warned that if these two people come in again, you know, they'll get beaten up, you know, and things will happen to us. So, you know, and I was surprised by the extremity of that reaction, you know, that, that even after like a year, you know, people can still feel very hostile to, you know, to outsiders or to journalists. You know, and so, yeah, that was shocking, and how they had an influence on other residents of that neighborhood, that they could actually tell other residents of the neighborhood that it's not safe for these people to come in from Yin City and to come in and film. I guess that was surprising to me.
Okay.
Yeah, they were fearful of our safety, actually, and of not so much on theirs, but on us. They were fearful that if we come and talk to them, that, you know, we will be attacked by someone who's not happy. So it's strange that they are in a way protecting us, fearful. But largely it's fear. So it's not nice to have this kind of fear in the neighborhood at that time. And that's very sad, actually. Yeah. It's not shocking to me, but it's very sad. And I think it is completely understandable if you watch the video at that time, yeah, watching YouTube and how people were like shouting in the streets, shouting in the hall, being very angry. It was not something that you see every day at that time. Mm-hmm. Now, perhaps that we are more desensitized towards all this behavior, but not in 2010.
Yeah, I mean, it was shocking. And I think even you guys mentioned towards the end of the documentary that, you know, some people didn't want to talk to you. You know, they feared for your safety, their safety. They did, and I think some just didn't want to rock the boat. Am I correct? They just didn't want to talk about the situation anymore. Is that correct mm-hmm. as well?
Yeah, I think the reason why is basically because they're not sure what to say. And it's very raw. The feeling was very raw. Whether they are going to betray their neighbors. How would, you know, if they were recorded on film to say certain things, who would they hurt? So it's a feeling like, if I say this, would I hurt my neighbor? What would people think about my opinions and stuff like that? They don't want to, like, add more hurt to whatever that they are feeling already at that time. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I just want to talk a little bit about, you know, the whole medium of documentary, which you chose, you know, to tell this story. As I mentioned, both of you, or as you both said, you know, you're both journalists, but you wanted to do a film about this. You know, why did you want to do that? Why did you want the medium of film used to tell this story and to show, I mean, all the different sides that you did eventually show?
So actually, it goes back to what Siti said about finding out something surprising, right, in the story that we didn't expect. Mm. And that was the fact that, you know, that this was essentially a planning issue. And film allowed us, because we, through the use of animation, allowed us to show the viewer how the history of this place came about, how the temple was first there, how it was surrounded first by rubber plantations. And then, you know, as history went by, the rubber plantations all disappeared, and then how the houses came up, right? So so that was important to actually show the viewers, oh, this is the history of it. And secondly, I wanted to also kind of use, because when you talk about it in text form, you don't really get the visceralness of the Khalsed protests, and also the stuff that people were saying during the protests, and when you allowed them to just say it, right, it just speaks, it just hits you on a different level. And also we managed to also, like Siti mentioned, you know, find this video of this town hall meeting that the state government tried to have with people from Section 19 and Section 26. And you could see how, yeah, people were just jumping up on chairs and just, you know, somehow determined to turn the whole meeting upside down. And and when people saw it, right, they were like, wow, you know, there's something else going on here. So that's why I chose. I mean, I had written an article before in 2009, but I felt somehow that, you know, because it's something like you said also, Juliet, you know, you knew about it, but you didn't go, you know, deeper into it. So I also knew something about it. I wanted to go deeper into it, and I wanted to bring the viewer around to go deeper into it, to find, you know, the real story. And for me, at least, my intention was to, you know, bridge this divide between Muslims and Hindus as to what happened. I mean, me personally, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nurbaya, anything you wanted to add to that?
Basically, it's Sheridan said most of, I agree with what he said, because this was how we felt in the beginning, because I really wanted to find out why it happened, why to the extent, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to, of course, challenge Sheridan's perception that it's all politics, because I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I believe that it can be taken advantage of. People's sentiment is can always be taken advantage. And in this documentary, it is how when you feel strongly about something and you are being used by a third party because of what you feel. So it is, Tauke Manches is exactly, is a good example of how an unfulfilled promise is being sold in certain way and used by certain parties for their own vested interests. At the cost of people's feelings and emotions, and at the cost of people's neighbors' relations, and because it is a multicultural neighborhood, it involves interracial relations. So this is really sad. If we are not careful, it can happen again because of this sentiment. Yeah. I'm not saying what has happened after the temple issue, but it will continue to happen right until, you know, in the next 50 years if we are not careful about it. Because let me put it like this. When you feel strongly about something and there's somebody there who can leverage on your emotions, be careful how you invest your emotions in. Because maybe this person will profit from it, or this third party will profit from it. And this is what documentaries is all about. Somebody profiting from your sentiment.
And, you know, I mean, we've seen it happen, right? I mean, yes, the incident was 10 years ago. And yes, as you said, Sheridan, you know, we're still facing issues related to racial tension, discrimination. We've seen things like, you know, get to that state, right? That state of the fire already happening, right? What do you hope people will take away from that incident, you know, looking back and realizing like this is what actually caused it? It was a planning issue that caused all of this, right? And like you said, Nurbaya, you know, like all of this was being used to leverage on your insecurities or, you know, your fears, right? What do you hope people will take away from this particular issue and, you know, hopefully think about today, you know, when we're seeing sorts of similar sort of puppet masters trying to use the fears of people to get them on their side kind of thing, for their own personal benefit, of course.
What do we learn from this is, like I said just now, we have to be careful. When you feel strongly about something, find out. When somebody proposes something, find out who benefits from certain actions. So I think it is very important. Like I always believe there are always two sides of the coins. And the question that you should ask before you invest in something, your emotions or your opinion or anything, who benefits? The question of who benefits from all this should be asked.
Okay. And also, you know, are they trying to hide something? That is something else that you need to think about. I mean, for me, I mean, like sometimes, you know, these things come up when something else major is happening. And so this is an easy way to sort of divert attention, isn't it? But what about you, Sheridan? How do you feel?
So, you know, continuing from what Nurbaya said, you know, about finding out about things. You know, one reason how you find out about things and what is the story behind this story, right, is to watch documentaries like ours, you know. I've had, you know, when we screened it in you know, we screened Tauke Manches in many places. Me and Nurbaya, you know, have gone with FFN to screen it in Penang. And people will come up to me and tell us, you know, thank you for doing this story, you know, Hindus, Muslims. I mean, we've had people from Section 19 telling Nurbaya, you know, personally that they felt so vindicated, you know, they're so appreciative for us finally telling their story. I've had, you know, people who are not inshallah who say like, you know, thank you for telling this story, you know, because they felt that Hinduism or Islam was given a bad rap, you know, of after all of this has happened. And I think one reason why we keep seeing these things happening, and you know, and recently we saw this with the Seafield Temple incident, you know, maybe different parties involved, but it's the same thing. It's about a temple that needs to be relocated or whether it needs to be relocated, and it's about the management of that relocation. How did it come about? You know, what did the state government do? You know, how did the negotiations fail to the point whereby you had a riot and a fireman had to die? right?
Yeah.
So it's so tragic that you know, Seafield happened almost like, you know, nearly 10 years after, you know, Tate Manchester, the Section 19 temple.
Actually, it's exactly a decade.
Is it exactly a decade? Yeah,
it's exactly,
you're right.
Like a decade. 20,
exactly a decade. So it's like, you know, nobody learned anything. And my response to that is that maybe nobody learned anything because not many people, or Tauke Manches is not allowed to be viewed by the larger public out there because of the film censorship laws that we have right now, you know. And this is something that the Freedom Film Network is working on, is the film censorship laws. Because I'm not saying that if, you know, people watched Tauke Manches, you know, 10 years ago, they, you know, things like Sifu wouldn't happen, but maybe they would if more people understood that. If you do not take the management of houses of worship seriously, you know, and because we live in a multicultural society, then these things will fester and they will blow up, right? And extremists will come in to exploit the situation. But films like Tauke Manches and many of the films that Freedom Film Network does, you know, especially that, you know, in this whole series, Juliet, that you're doing, right, are not allowed to be viewed even on RTM. Because of the film censorship laws that we have right now.
Yeah.
So my message to viewers and people listening to this, if you want to see, if you believe that films like Tauke Manches should be viewed, films like Syndicate, all the films under Freedom Film Network, which are all in BM, by the way, they're not in English, only the subtitles are in English. So they're actually made for a BM audience. If you want them to be viewed, then please come to the Freedom Film Network's webpage and support the Bebaskan Film, Merdeka Kan Minda Raya Initiative. Because, you know, we want more Malaysians to watch our films and to listen to these stories. Because, you know, we feel that these are the stories that need to be listened to, that need to be watched, in order for us to mature as a society.
One of the things that we'd like to feature is about, it's not always all doom and gloom. When we watch a documentary, in our documentary, it is about how to move forward. So when we interviewed a professor, he actually explained the psyche behind it, about race relations, what happened with the management of religion. That is the heart of the story, actually. If we manage these relations better, then, you know, we do not have a gap that an extremist can jump in and leverage or take advantage of. So this is by right how people should see our relation. It's about relationship, basically. Your neighbors, how do you interact with your neighbors? How do you trust your neighbors? And I think in any society, being good neighbors is central to having a good community.
For sure. Well, my thanks to both of you. And I do hope that, you know, everyone heads to the Freedom Film Fest YouTube channel this weekend. The film is going to be released from tonight, which is Friday. And just search for Kisah Tauke Manches dan Minyak Tumpah. Thank you again. I've been speaking to Sheridan Mahavira Shakir and Siti Nurbaya Natsmi, who are both the film directors of that film. It's a very short documentary, 30 minutes, but there's so much packed into it. And you'll come away with so much new knowledge and so much to think about. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can always search for the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Yang ini yang kita takut. Tindakan daripada segelintir individu-individu yang ekstrim ini. Merosakkan bangsa kita.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.